In victory or defeat, true fans never quit. Champions are made by the fans. That's why 5-Hour Energy is adding a new limited edition Stand the Fan 5-Hour Energy Shot to their roster. Fuel your team's spirit with a taste as sweet as an overtime win. Packed with an all-star lineup of B vitamins, nutrients, and 230 milligrams of caffeine, it keeps you feeling energized, loud, and proud all game long. Check out 5hourenergy.com to grab your Stand the Fan Shot today.
Biggs Report with Brad Biggs.
Biggs time.
Biggsy.
His name is Brad Biggs.
Brad Biggs talks football with you.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, the score. Brad Biggs is the football man of the Chicago Tribune, a long time contributor to the station and a valued friend. And he joins us now on the Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, your all-weather tire, Aturo.com. Big Zay.
Morning, Brad.
Morning, boys. What's going on?
There we are. Well, Big Zay, you were there. You saw it. You had unfolded in front of you. Do you believe that that Matt Eberflus might have been a little down? Do you think he wasn't as his usual peppy and bubbly self? Did you see a difference in him yesterday, as some people are claiming they saw?
I mean, I think if people were watching, there was a difference the week before, right? When he had to fire Shane Waldron and after they sleptwalked through the Patriots game. I don't think this was anything new yesterday. You know, it's the NFL, it's professional sports, and when things aren't going your way, that can make it a little bit more difficult to get through the day.
So, all right, let's cut to the chase. Your mailbag in ChicagoTribune.com has a headline: how many wins does Matt Eberflus need to save his job? What's your best guess?
Well, I think, first of all, the way I answer that question is I think it's a lot more nuanced than just putting a number on it, right? I don't think anyone that's making decisions like this with really any team in any season has a hard and fast number in mind, right? What you're looking at is what direction is the program headed in? Are we meeting expectations? Are we getting better? What's the trajectory of the organization at the end of the season? What was the, you know, how were things trending in the second half of the season? And all of that's very subjective, much more so than just throwing a number on it. But I think it was realistic to expect or hope that this team could be better than the one a year ago. And that being said, the schedule's a lot more difficult than it was last season, and he's facing an uphill climb to get to, above 500. Like, I don't know that going from 7-10 to 8-9 does it, but if they play really good the next 7 weeks to get to 8-9, maybe there's a discussion, but there's a lot that adds up against him right now. Coaching staff turnover, the failure of the team to close out games in the fourth quarter. That stuff's going to weigh heavy unless they start playing really good football.
It's going to be difficult if DeAndre Swift can't go, you know, obviously, and you wrote about it in the Tribune. You got to be able to run against this team, and the best thing they do is they stop the run, but you got to be able to get balance to your offense. You can't be as predictable as the Bears get when they fall behind and then they have to throw. I just think that it's almost like the last injury you need going into a game like that. And you know, Matt Eberflus said there's a good chance that you won't see him practice again today, but it's sort of a day-to-day situation. Maybe he'll be okay by Sunday.
Yeah, my main takeaway from what he said, he sounded relatively positive. Like there was a decent chance here that that he'll be out there. So maybe not today, but this didn't sound like they were overly concerned as you point ahead to the ball game on Sunday. We'll learn a little bit more later today, certainly a lot more tomorrow. Yeah, he came out of the game. Everything appeared fine. So if I was guessing right now, it would be that there's a decent chance Swift is going to be able to give it a go on Sunday.
Montez Sweat was not on the injury report. Is that the good news or the bad news?
Yeah, I mean, they need more. That's a great question. They need more production from him. But if you're out there, if you're playing and you've got something, you've still got to produce, right? Like it's professional football, and 3.5 sacks and 7 quarterback hits to this point, and you would be hoping to see more from him. I don't know that he's been the multiplier that they had hoped, at least in the last, month plus. They got after the quarterback pretty well at the start of the season, but of late, especially in the last 4 games, it's been, I think, sporadic at best.
Brad, we know the injury list included Elijah Hicks and that they signed another safety. We know they brought in 5 guys for tryouts. I'm just wondering, when you look at where they are at with that position, how does a move to potentially a third-string safety impact what they can do defensively? I mean, obviously, it has an impact, and they got one of the best playmakers in the league at the wide receiver position in Jefferson. So it's just a wrong game to have issues like that kind of come up.
Yeah, I mean, you never want to get down to your third guy, and they've at least covered themselves with a veteran on the practice squad in Adrian Colbert. But Jonathan Owens has played a decent amount of football in his career, and he'd be next up for Elijah Hicks. They didn't really rule Hicks out yesterday, but I'd be a little surprised if he goes on Sunday. I'll say this much. If Elijah Hicks is out there against the Vikings, he's probably unlikely to be 100%. Safety, I guess there's – it's not the worst position in the world to be down a little bit at. And again, they've got some guys with experience there. So that's not going to be an excuse. They got to go out and do a really nice job against Justin Jefferson, against Sam Darnold, and find a way to stay in this ballgame. They've got to be able to provide a couple instances of really premium field position for their offense. I'm talking about the Bears defense. So, this is a huge matchup for them, and I think it's going to be a physical game. I think it sets up as one of those really hard hitting games, and it's going to be up to the Bears to answer the call to make it entertaining.
Could it be a decent matchup for the defense? Because you look at the Viking running game; it's really suffered without Darisaw, and you have Aaron Jones, who doesn't have 100-yard rushing output since week 3. And if the Bears can make the Vikings one-dimensional, maybe you can come after Sam Darnold. Maybe he can be the guy that throws you the ball under pressure. I don't know, Brad, but a team that doesn't run the ball well against a defense that doesn't stop the run well, seems like the Bears may be in a better situation this week than maybe some weeks.
Yeah, and they played that defense played pretty well against the Packers, all things considered. You don't want to give up that drive at the end, but you look at the way that they got a red zone takeaway, that they got some stops in that game. I thought the run defense against the Packers after the opening possession was pretty solid. When, again, you got to look at the personnel and look at things realistically, right? They don't have superior talent in the interior there. So, yeah, I think that's the formula for victory, right? Is play good defense, play good special teams, and you know, hope that your offense can make some plays. That is their formula, and when they've executed it, it's looked pretty good at times, but they just haven't been able to have all three of them clicking at the same time in some of these games and the key breakdowns that we've been over over and over again.
This segment with Brad Biggs is sponsored by Estwing Professional Tools, made in the USA for 100 years, estwing.com. The king of the cover zero blitz was the way that the quarterback, Caleb Williams, referred to Brian Flores. How difficult, he ran over the game plan of what they need to do. You know, you got to be able to pick everything up. You got to have a plan for it. You got to get the ball to your playmakers. I mean, you know, we kind of understand all of that. How will the challenge be different this week versus last week versus really any week with the 3-4 defense coming from so many different places?
Yeah, the challenge here is the Vikings do so much that they kind of try to screw you up with your rules, with your assignments, with your rules up front in the trenches. And that's both in pass blocking and in run blocking. Like we talk about the blitzing that they do, and they've been successful. They've got three outside linebackers with seven or more sacks right now. They've got 35 sacks. I think they're tied for the third most in the league, but they run blitz a lot too. So they are sending guys through gaps, and you don't know where they're coming from at all times. So the Bears talked about having some answers for all the looks they're seeing, but that they're simple answers, ones that can be identified, everyone's on the same page, and be effective. You know, you saw it last year, the first snap of the game when that Brian Flores defense came in, they sent six guys. Justin Fields wasn't aware, and he wears it on his back when DJ Wonnum clobbers him from behind. So they need to be aware. They need to be prepared. And they're probably going to see some stuff that maybe Minnesota hasn't shown since, you know, week three or four, right? Like it's new stuff every week, and it's challenging for a 6-year veteran at quarterback, and it's probably more challenging for a rookie at quarterback. And we know some of the issues that they've had on the offensive line. You know, they've talked about Coleman Shelton, the center, and the improvement in terms of communication with Caleb, and they seem like they're getting on the same page. So it will be interesting to see. Tevin Jenkins' return to practice yesterday is limited, so they have a shot to get the left guard back in the mix, and they can use all the help they could get.
So, Brad, I think everyone would like to look ahead and not back, and this is why having coordinators speak on a Thursday is kind of a bad idea. But Richard Hightower will be available today, and he'll be asked time and again about the final sequence, the field goal block, the hash, where Cairo Santos wanted the ball, what the wind was doing, etc. What do you expect to hear from Richard Hightower today?
You know, if I'm Richard Hightower, the script I'm sticking to is responsibility lies with me. I'm the coach, and we have to block that better. We've got to block that better. Maybe the kick needs to be a little bit higher. But the biggest story there is the failure for them to block in a situation when you know you've got an all-out rush coming. Like, teams don't roll out their Cadillac kick block plan generally in the first or second quarter. You might not see it in the third quarter. You might not see it at all during the game. You might see it on an extra point in the fourth quarter. With the final play of the game, you're going to get their A move, right? You are going to get their best, and the Bears were sadly unprepared for it. And so I think that's what Hightower would – if I'm sitting there, that's what I'm talking about, that as a coach, I didn't have the guys as well prepared as they needed to be.
Why Colin Johnson added to the roster, and I know he's still on the roster, but whatever happened to Tyler Scott? We haven't seen him at all this year.
Yeah, I mean, Colin Johnson's a guy who you see these moves at a position like wide receiver where they've got three frontline guys.
Yeah.
And that leads me to believe that there's probably some level of special teams involved with the move. You know, Tyler Scott is a smaller frame guy, so it's probably not going to be involved on some of your coverage things. Maybe not, obviously not on punt as well. And Johnson's a bigger frame guy who can run. And that's what a move like that, you know, like, no, he's not going to become this X receiver in the game with the talent that they have at that position right now.
They got enough guys they can't get the ball to.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So you look at it and you say, okay, well, what's the situation here? Well, Tre'Vious Moore has a concussion. He's a safety that's on the 53-man roster. He's working through the protocol. You had Hicks go out, who had been a core special teams player before he started starting. And you've had Owens, who's been a core special teams guy, who probably slides into Hicks' spot this week. So Owens isn't going to be as involved on special teams. So Johnson's a guy that, you know, could immediately figure into some of those slots.
So, Brad, obviously with so much focus on the head coaching speculation around the league and in Chicago, Brian Flores coming to town as a former head coach who'd had some success and ended loudly in Miami for a lot of different reasons. Do you consider him a viable head coaching candidate on the next sort of carousel? And would he be somebody, if the Bears job does open, you think they should talk to?
Yeah, I think he's a viable guy. Yeah. I mean, I think he's a fantastic defensive coordinator. I know he is. If you're going to get with him, I think you're going to talk to him about vision, what he sees, what his plan would be. And then I think naturally you're going to have questions about, okay, what did you learn the first time you had an opportunity, right? How have you evolved? What would you do differently? And I think you want to see if you can come away convinced, and you're probably doing research of your own separate of that conversation, but has the guy evolved? Is he going to be able to handle the big chair again? You know, he can be a top flight coordinator, and what he's done the past couple of years in Minnesota. The personnel's gotten a little bit better there, no question about it, but it's fantastic what they've been able to do. So I think he'd be a candidate for, every team that's got an opening, unless somebody's, pigeonholed themselves into, we're only looking at offensive guys or we're only looking at this. He seems to be in a good spot otherwise.
Well, he still has a couple of lawsuits pending against
Exactly, and that's the behind closed doors, yeah. Where there's more closed doors and a couple more closed doors, where's ownership league wide? I'm talking about the right. Where are they at on that? I have no idea.
Yeah.
I'm assuming he'll be of interest to at least a handful of teams that have openings, but that's an assumption I'm making.
I mean, he should be, but then again, you never know.
I mean, these lawsuits, who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows?
Great stuff, Big Z. Thank you, buddy. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Brad.
Have a great day, guys.
Great answer on the special team stuff, if indeed Owens is moving. And I forgot that the other safety was in concussion protocol. It's not good. Maybe they'll bring someone up before the game. You know, maybe a Colbert could be moved onto the active roster if indeed you're in a situation where you're
they can flex guys,
yeah,
too.
They can flex somebody.
Makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. All right. 312-644-6767. A lot of people want to talk. We'll get to your calls next. Mullion on the screen.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
He's going to blitz you. I mean, he's the king of cover zero blitz. Us being decisive, us having a plan for all of that. And then from there, get the ball to your playmakers, run the ball well and efficiently. And from there, when they give you shots and give you explosive plays, you make those plays.
Mullion Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. That is the coach. That's the quarterback. That's Caleb Williams, but he's telling you what Brian Flores likes to do, the defensive coordinator, and how they have to combat it. And it's going to be a different challenge than it was last week. The Bears did a good job last week of getting rid of the ball, of not sitting in the pocket, of balancing the run and the pass, and Caleb got out quickly, and he had they converted on third down the whole game, and he made four of them with runs.
They were 9-16 on third down, yep. A lot more efficient, a lot more predictable, a lot more tempo that you haven't seen in previous weeks. Yep. That, I think, was the Thomas Brown effect. They need to continue that. I also think that when you face as much pressure as he's bound to face this week against the Vikings because of who they're playing against, then you can't be afraid to take shots down the field and give your receivers a chance to make plays. And you're going to see probably more single coverage, man coverage. Somebody is not getting doubled if they play too deep man underneath it. And so whoever that is might be the most attractive option for Caleb Williams. If he can buy himself some time, stay aggressive, and throw down the field, that's how good things can happen. That hasn't happened enough, and I think that's what's missing from the Bears' passing game.
312-644-6767. Pete's on the north side. Hey, Pete.
Gentlemen, I'm going to the game. I got tickets through a friend. It's the first game I've been to since probably 2017, 2018 against Detroit. I don't know what I'm looking at, but I'm going to go anyway. That's all I'm going to say. You guys talk about it. I don't know. I don't even know why I'm going except to have fun and be with the crowd. But my expectations are extremely low. I'm a huge Bears fan. I've been all my life, but it's tough to keep having, you know, radio right. shows like what we're having right now when we're talking about a team that's underachieving. I'll leave it to you.
Well, I mean, that's fair.
It is redundant. There's no doubt about it. It feels repetitive, and it feels like history repeating itself because this is what's happening this year. This was not supposed to go this way.
Yes.
The first part of the schedule, the first half of the season, was going to be the time when you realized some of the potential that exists and justified the enthusiasm we had in preseason. That hasn't happened. So now we go down a familiar path. Enjoy the game anyways, Pete.
Yeah. I mean, here's the deal. This is a division opponent, okay? So in other words, this is a team you play twice a year. You are very familiar with this team. You understand what they want to do, where the danger problems are, and I don't know that you know how to beat them because I can't sit here and predict they're going to win, but this should be a game where you play pretty hard. I mean, listen, they weren't awful against Green Bay, but they were beaten in the margins. And at the end of the game, that happened yet again. And so a game you could have, should have, really needed to win, you didn't. And that's happened way too often this year, quite frankly. So it's they are in a really bad situation. And you lose four games in a row, I mean, I can understand people not having a lot of faith.
Yeah.
And them being able to turn it
around. You've lost six games, but the loss of confidence in what they're doing has been just as profound.
Yes.
Because you go into Sunday and all the things you say are valid and true. You're playing a Vikings team that you could justify. And look, we could talk about how they do match it pretty well. The Vikings don't run the ball very well. Aaron Jones hasn't had a 100-yard rushing game since week three. You can double Justin Jefferson and take your chances blitzing Sam Darnold. He might throw you the football because he's seen ghosts again.
Right.
Maybe.
Right.
All these things are true, but it's hard to be passionate about that and believe too much in that because you've been disappointed and the Bears have shown you who they really are.
Yeah, they have.
And that's a team that is bound to disappoint you time and again.
Yeah, but just from a talent level, and I don't want to even make an argument.
What, don't finish that. From a talent level, what?
They are a younger and really as athletic as the Minnesota Vikings. Mm-hmm. Now, the Vikings, probably a better coached team. Probably better coached on defense. Definitely better coached on offense.
There's no doubt about it. It's not probably, definitely.
And I think that one of the problems that you have is that we are talking about a crisis of confidence in the coaching of this team.
Mm-hmm.
And you're playing division opponents, all of whom seem set with the coaches that they have settled on, right? Dan Campbell is doing a really good job. I heard him talking yesterday about you have to have the assistants around you. He's got a whole group of people that had played previously in the NFL that understand everything about what players are going through. I don't think you have to be a great NFL player to be a good NFL coach. I don't know that it even helps you in different spots, but I think that it helps get the respect of the players. And I think that they've got a really good thing going. We saw, you know, Matt Eberflus can't beat Green Bay, but the bigger story is 11 in a row for Green Bay. For whatever reason, Matt LaFleur, the flower himself, can't lose to the Bears, which is a real problem. And now you're going to see, you know, a guy who is a really good offensive-minded head coach that comes from, you know, the great group of head coaches, and they have another head coach who's doing different things on their defense, and he's now a defensive coordinator, and you like their staff. I just think that
the Bears are at a coaching deficit.
Yeah, and that's a problem
in the division
every week.
It's a problem every week.
It is a problem.
And you went into the season hoping that it was going to be evened out a little bit.
Yes.
I'm not quite sure what we were basing that on, but year three of most regimes, you start to see things or start to want to see things in terms of progress. And if you don't, that's when you start to be compelled to make a move. That's where the Bears are right now. They're closer to changing directions again than they are to breaking through and showing progress.
Let's try Mark. Mark's in South Bend. Hey, Mark.
Hey, good morning, David and Molly. Hey, Molly, I totally agree with you. Mark is not ready to coach not only the Bears but in the NFL. He's in his third season, and he also lost to Marshall at home a couple years ago. I know that was his first season and everything, but even if he makes the playoffs and has success in the playoffs, I don't, you know, and he, like you said, he's a defensive coordinator. He's pretty young and Poles is a very young GM. I think that would be a bad combination. I wouldn't go on to Marcus Freeman as a leader of men.
Thanks, Mark.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that the Bears should interview Marcus Freeman if they have a job opening. I'm not suggesting that he would be a good NFL coach. I think I've said pretty clearly, definitively and loudly, stay in South Bend. Continue to build there. You haven't convinced everybody there that you're the right man for this job. don't start to look at others. And I would hang up on any NFL team that called to ask for an interview. And I would say, no, thank you. I have work to do here.
Well, and just so you understand the backstory, the NFL Network had a list of projected head coaches, guys that are ready to make the step into the league, mm-hmm. or guys ready to make the step up in the league. And he was on that list. So as we look at the Bears and their situation, and we don't know yet what's going to happen. There's a lot of football to be played. There's still 7 games remaining in the season, but the Bears are 4-6, and they're definitely trending the wrong way. They're in the midst of a 4-game losing streak. If Matt Eberflus does not survive, and remember, he barely survived last year, but his work as a defensive coordinator kind of is what saved his job. And we've talked really for a while now about what they should do moving forward, and I'm of the mind that they have to get an offensive-minded coach because the priority has to be the quarterback. Mm-hmm. And you just can't keep changing coordinators. I mean, Caleb Williams already on his second, and he's not even a year in. It's tough. It's a tough situation. And if you hire a defensive-minded coach and you bring in a new offensive coordinator, that guy could, if he does a good job, could get a job somewhere else. You know, you could Adam Gase the whole thing up. And so you got to be careful about making sure that whoever you bring in, if he's doing a good job, is going to be here for Caleb Williams. That's my opinion.
And you have to be curious whether or not it will stop there. If you start to head in a direction that you wonder, okay, head coach, offensive coordinator, if they both are launched and fired, do you bring back the general manager who hired both those guys? Is he also part of the purge, or is he secure in his job, Ryan Poles?
It's a fair thought, and it's a good idea. I think the problem for me is that when they hired Poles, they gave him a list of 3 guys he could choose from. They did not let him go out and get his own coach, mm-hmm. in my opinion. So
He maintained that he would have done the same thing.
I know he did, but what was he supposed to say? I mean, I'm just saying, he's already – they already had reduced the
– my sense is that he didn't have enough experience to launch his own search.
They were interviewing GMs and coaches at the same time.
And they hired 2 guys who didn't ever done the job before.
Yeah, but they hired the general manager before the coach and let him make the final decision.
Right.
And he took the guy who he shares an agent with, whatever. I don't – maybe he has a relationship with Flusi that we don't know about previously.
But the fact of the matter is that
I just feel like he should get his own guy.
Well, okay, we're looking. I'm not there yet. I don't know if the season falls off the tracks even more than it does. How that is justifiable? But we'll wait and see.
Well, I mean, the only reason I would say it is because you're right. They hired a guy that had no experience as a general manager, and they hand the whole operation to him. And now you're gonna. He made one really good trade.
Yeah,
he made
historically good trade.
He made a bad trade.
Yeah,
and he made a pretty good trade. So I mean. The team isn't good enough. It's 3 years in.
Let's look at the bottom line, though.
Well,
bottom line is
he has the same record as the coach.
He's got the same record as the coach, and you're facing a $15 million mistake.
Oh, yeah.
Because Matt Eberflus, if you fire him at the end of the season, he has 2 years remaining on a deal that pays him reportedly $4.5 million a year. Shane Waldron is still due $6 million. So
That adds up. It's something to be considered. It's also chump change when you're talking about billion-dollar franchises, multiple billions. Bears sell this franchise, they probably get $6 billion. I know they don't have the cash in hand. I know it's part of their budget, and it's going out, and it's coming in. I know it's easy for me to spend people's money or make mistakes, but the reality is you got to get this thing right. And I don't know that scuttling Ryan Poles at this point is the right move. And I don't know, you know, who's out there that you're going to bring in that wouldn't want to start from scratch. I think you're already down a road a little bit here. And it's about making sure that the decisions made to this point, the trade you made, bringing in Caleb Williams, that's got to work.
It's also unrealistic, more than likely, because of the public confidence that Kevin Warren has placed in Ryan Poles.
Yes.
It would be...
And George.
It would be, less so George, because George has backtracked before, but it would be unlike, and I think Kevin Warren would not want to seem as hypocritical as that would seem last offseason, saying what he has said about Ryan Poles, wanting to be his mentor, and then after a bad season, firing him and not sticking with him and giving him another shot.
Yeah, I think he'll get 5 years, because I think you almost have to give him 5 years. Because if he hires a new coach, you can't get rid of the general manager. You got to wait till the schism comes with the new coach. I just don't feel like that's the right move. But
well, if he's given a reprieve after this season, then yeah, he's going to be here a while.
Yes,
and you better feel comfortable with that reality.
It's a great point, David. All right, we got a lot of people who want to check in. We'll get your calls. 312-644-6767. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
I know the guys are excited to get back on the field, and working. And it was get back to work day. No one's going to feel sorry for us. We got an opponent coming in here, and it's important that we get back to work. The position rooms are locked in, ready to go. We got a defined plan for this week, and we got to execute that plan.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, the Score. That's Matt Eberflus.
I know it's a crisis, but it seems a little drastic locking them in the position rooms.
The position rooms are locked in.
Oh, okay.
I think it's more like they're focusing.
Although,
that's one way of doing
it. Well, you could definitely get people to get along.
We are locked in the studio because Mitch is always afraid that we would try to get out.
I understand locked in here. I never knew that.
Sentence. Oh, yeah. That door doesn't open.
Okay.
You know what's funny about that door is you can lock the door. Like, there is a little lock on it.
Yeah. And there's some days I think we should.
I have locked it.
Yeah.
Like, when I saw Dustin coming,
I
locked
the
door.
I get that.
I thought that was funny.
Especially the way he was this morning.
But he rolled his eyes and went back in and wouldn't talk to me after that.
Yeah, oh, well.
I just saw him walking up. You know, I thought it would be amusing to lock the door.
Yeah.
It wasn't taken, is that?
Hilarious.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. He weighs in.
He's doing another impersonation.
And yet that was probably his best point of the day.
Wow. Now you really upset him.
Well, he had a tough start to the day.
Oh, we kind of got on over some stuff.
But plus, he started the day definitely in the wrong way. You do not scrape.
Scraping my windows with my company ID?
Yeah, you don't. Get a scraper. Not your ID card.
It was in
card.
The garage. I wasn't going back.
All right.
Yeah. Once he gets out, he never goes back.
Let's get to the phone lines.
Got a lot of people want to check in, and we'll start with Jeff. Jeff's on the Odyssey app. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. What Pete's going to see when he goes to the game is the worst coach in his division by a wide margin. So that's what he gets to look forward to. I'd like to go over the last 4.5 minutes of the game, not in 4.5 minutes, but in quick fashion. I know you guys talked about this on Tuesday, but that 4th-and-3 from the 49-yard line, they should have went for it, and here's the reason why. Mm-hmm. You're up 5. You have a way to get a field goal out of that or a touchdown. Either one of those, you're either going to overtime or winning the game. Plus, if you punt and pin, your defense in this game had no pressure on that quarterback, allowed 4 sustained drives into the red zone where they scored touchdowns on 3 of those, and the only reason you got the ball back on the other one is he threw a bad pass and got an interception. So I would not punt and pin when your defense is playing that poorly. He challenges a play and loses another challenge and loses a timeout that would have been crucial at the end of the game on that 60-yard pass play. So at the end of the game, we get to the point where the field goal is going to get kicked, and it's not his fault.
I get that, though,
Jeff.
He
didn't block well. Huh?
I get that challenge. That ball was moving.
I can go halfway on that, but he lost another challenge. That timeout would have been crucial, though. So you get to the end, and if you had 2 timeouts, even with the 1 timeout, I think you could have thrown a pass play there. And I know you guys said you didn't agree with that either. But if you look at the line on that 3rd down call.
It was 2nd down. You could run a play and then kill the clock. I mean, you know, there was no time issue whatsoever at the end of that game other than wanting to get to a 46-yard field goal. It's, you know, Jeff, you wouldn't have had to, and thanks for the phone call, you wouldn't have had to throw a pass unless something went awry, like he's talking about, a holding call. Hey, guys, don't get called for holding on this play. There were like two timeouts before that, right? They had to look at the play and the or an offside. Guys, make sure you don't jump. I mean, come on. Are you kidding me? They could easily have run another play, probably two. If something had gone awry, they could have run another play after that. It was second down, and they had a timeout left.
Jeff's overall phone call, though, questioning the late-game decision-making of Matt Eberflus is justified given his 5-17 record in one-score games.
Yes.
When you have a record like that, you're going to be asked about him at press conferences on Wednesday at Hallis Hall, and you're going to get callers who are scrutinizing, you know, in the days after another one-score loss. That goes with the territory. We get it. I just don't think that some of those are worthy of second-guessing. I would have probably challenged it, too, the Christian Watson catch, because I do think that had they ruled it an incompletion on the field, it would have been upheld. They ruled it a completion, so it was upheld. It was pretty close.
And I think that, you know, everyone has a different philosophy on what to do with challenges.
Mm-hmm.
Lovey, his philosophy was always, if it is a big play, a potentially game-deciding play, you challenge it. Just as a general rule,
yep,
you make sure that you're challenging those kinds of
mm-hmm.
plays. And at that point in the game...
That was.
Yes, it was.
Big play.
So I didn't mind that challenge. It wasn't as egregious as one that happened in front of them in the second quarter where it was like, oh, no, wait a minute.
That one? Yeah. That was many weeks ago, but
yes,
that creates a kind of doubt that you're hearing now because he's worthy of questioning everything.
Let's try Rick. He's on the road. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, we should probably take a break, and then we'll get to Rick and everyone
right.
else who's calling in when we come back.
Yes, I beg your pardon. Rick, we'll stay tuned. We'll be right back with you. Mully and Haw on the score.